You're listening to Sounds Good on WKMS. I am Tracy Ross. Kate Lochte's joined me in the studio, along with Faculty Director Matthew Kreider. He's an assistant professor here at Murray State University. We'll be discussing Oliver Goldsmith's She Stoops to Conquer, or The Mistakes of a Knight. Thanks for being on Sounds Good.
Yeah, pleasure. Thank you.
1773, you're doing a play at Robert E. Johnson Theater that was hot then, and apparently it continues to be hot with audiences through the ages. Why?
It's really tough to point to one thing that really has made this one pop for so long, but I tend to believe that the world that they're showing is both a historical document of what the manners and propriety of the time were, and also how manners and propriety in general can get in the way of real human communication. I mean, we're fortunate that they managed to resolve everything by the end of the play, but it's really, you know, in modern terms, it would be political correctness of, you know, if these people just walked into the room and were themselves and said what they wanted and what they felt, we wouldn't have had all the crazy mistakes of the night that happen. It takes the people who are really confident in themselves playing pranks on everyone to get the thing to resolve nicely.
Dare you speak to the plot?
Oh, sure. It's a rather convoluted entity, but in simple terms, it's two couples who are trying very hard to get married. One pair who hasn't met each other, they're being introduced formally, and another who have met some time ago and have had to hide the fact that they've been courting formally on the sly. The second pair is trying to elope, and the first pair is trying to figure out what this person is they're going to meet. The man, Sir Charles Marlowe, he has a little bit of a problem that whenever he meets a formal, well-bred, proper woman, he turns into a gibbering idiot. But whenever he meets...
I guess that's pretty universal.
Yes. Well, it's a particular fun for him because whenever he meets, you know, the saucy maid at the tavern, he's perfectly fine, perfectly straightforward. And that's where we get the title, because in order to get to know the real him, she pretends to be a bartender. And so she has stooped to conquer his heart.
How are the students relating to the text and the language?
It is a challenge on two fronts. It's not all the way into the verse of Shakespeare, although the epilogue is iambic pentameter, but it is still quite elevated from our normal usages. So the first week of rehearsal was really dealing with the text and the language itself and being sure everyone knew what the heck they were saying. We're also layering the received pronunciation British dialect onto the show. So that's been a hoot of just backstage hearing various forms of London speech as they try to hone in on it. But for us, the real goal has been don't let the manners, the propriety get in the way of the story. Tell the story. Get past the artifice of the language and have fun, because it really is just silly.
Tell us who your principals are.
Tough to nail because there are so many storylines going on. Catherine Summerfield is playing Miss Kate Hardcastle, and she's the one who, in fact, stoops to conquer, as it were. And then Mauricio Innes is playing the bashful Charles Marlowe, trying to figure out what the heck's going on. The more fun character for the show for me, though, is Tony Lumpkin, the illegitimate son of Kate's mother. He's played by Salar Ardabili, and he's the mover and shaker in the show because he really just doesn't care. He just doesn't care in the slightest. All he wants to do is drink and gamble and whore his inheritance away. So he's the one who makes things happen.
And we were chatting about in all the manners. There's quite a bit of bawdiness in this play, songs and meals and.
Yes. The running joke for us really has been: if you think there's a sexual reference in the line, there is. If you suspect there's one, there is. If you don't think so, think twice, because there's probably a sexual reference. I mean, it's. Restoration Theater got banned several times because it was so bawdy.
How was it received when new?
It was received well. I mean, it was enjoyed. I mean, it's come and gone like anything. It's dealing with the manners of the time, which is why I still think it's universal, ironically was the problem for them at the time, because they were, for what us seems overly stiff and formal, at the time came off as ridiculously, ridiculously over the top bawdy and sexual. So, you know, it was scandalous at the time, but also enjoyed a lot because the people who went to the theater liked that kind of thing. There's a line in the epilogue about how Tony's going to take London by storm. And, you know, because he doesn't care about manners or propriety, so he's going to show them how to really live life. And he's going to do this and he's going to do this, but I'm not going to go to the plays because they say that's not polite.
The National Theater reviewer said this is one of the great generous-hearted and ingenious comedies of the English language, offering a celebration of chaos, courtship, and the dysfunctional family. Well, speak to the dysfunctional family part of this.
Well, let's see if I can break down the family tree a little bit. Mr. and Mrs. Hardcastle are the matriarch and patriarch of the house. Kate is their natural daughter. Tony Lumpkin is Mrs. Hardcastle's son from a previous marriage. They have a niece named Constance Neville, who the mother is trying to get the son to marry so that both their inheritances stay in the family. I think that's the familial relationships there. And then the two gentlemen callers, Charles Marlowe and George Hastings, show up, and it all just goes crazy.
There's a jewel robbery or a jewel disappearance in the
middle
of it?
Quite a few. Neville's inheritance is an extremely valuable collection of emeralds. And that's part of the reason the mother wants her to marry her son, so that both inheritances stay in the family. But the two kids, they're cousins. They don't want to marry each other in the slightest. And they don't like each other very much either. So when Hastings shows up and says, hey, I'd like to elope with her, Tony's all for that. And she refuses to leave without the jewels, so Tony steals them.
Now, Matthew, you said that you're doing this play period light. What does that mean?
Well, when you go into restoration, particularly in terms of costuming and movement and props, and I'm a movement specialist, so this is right in my wheelhouse, the amount of artifice that is layered on top of this. I mean, costumes start to weigh 30 or 40 pounds, particularly for the women whose, you know, dresses have large extensions to become much, much bigger. There's an enormous amount of meaning carried in how you hold a hand fan. And I didn't feel like giving the audience a thesaurus of what it meant to have a fan half open, full open at 45 degrees to the left of your shoulder. At the time, that would have had meaning. They would have known exactly, you know, she was being ridiculously forward, or, you know, she got shy because she opened it three clicks further open. You know, that's back to I want them to tell the story. That doesn't really help tell the story if the audience has to be buried in a dictionary. So we're using the look and the feel of the time, but eliminating things that, you know, a modern audience wouldn't, you know, have a chance at getting at first glance. So, you know, it will be elevated. It is presentational. The actors do speak directly to the audience quite frequently in asides, and we're leaving the house lights up for that particular purpose. But, you know, I also don't want them to have to spend 5 minutes on the process of taking snuff on stage in the proper gentlemanly way. I mean, you can get buried behind it. And
sure.
Given the idea of the play is that manners get in the way of things and formality gets in the way of honesty, I figure if my goal is to tell the story, I will riff to the period but not get buried in it.
You're directing. Who else is working on the play?
Well, it's a full faculty style of game. Daryl Philippi is our dialect coach for the show and our speech coach because we have so much layered language and dialect on it. Heidi Ortega is designing some stunning costumes because this is the time when costumes kind of rule. Justin Walsh is doing sound and building everything. And Brent is doing the lights, and he designed the set, which is a charming little inn we've built on stage.
Now you go up Thursday night. Are you ready?
Yeah. No, it's... We've just been spending the last few days layering in huge amounts of tech because the costumes showed up for the first time on Sunday. And for many of the women, they've had to practice wearing corsets for the first time. And that really changes a lot of things. And the gentlemen have to wear, you know, different styles of clothing and different fits of clothing than they're used to. And then last night, hair and makeup showed up, and quite a few of the men are unused to the idea of wearing wigs. So it's gradually layering these pieces on, but the kids have done a marvelous job. I'd say particularly in the last week and a half, something clicked for all of them, and they finally got the meaning of the language under their belt and started to really play with it.
So this will look like it would have looked.
Yes. Well, relatively close.
Wow, that's great.
It's relatively, again, period light. The look is appropriate and it's correct, but there are some places we've, you know,
the fans
cut some corners to say, I mean, the ladies do have fans, but we're not bothering with the Encyclopedia of Language of the Fan.
So shows are Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 7:30 at Robert E. Johnson Theater, and there's a Sunday matinee at 2:30.
That's correct.
Well, you must have been working on this play for quite some time.
Yeah, it was possibly, I'm not sure, this is my first year as a faculty member here.
Where'd you come from?
Previously, I taught at the University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point. And then before that, I was in graduate school at Brandeis University in Boston.
And you've been doing some theater work at Playhouse in the Park yourself?
I was in Daryl's production of Almost Maine. It was a charmingly fun show.
Really fun show, yeah. Well, I'm glad that you had time to come, despite the fact that you're putting up a huge play on Thursday night. Thank you for making time for us.
Oh, anytime.
Matthew Crater, and you should go see Oliver Goldsmith's 1773 hit, She Stoops to Conquer.